From a transmitter atop Great Blue Hill, this is WGBH, live, local talk, Boston Public Radio.
This is Boston Public Radio. I'm Jared Bowen. Today, we're serving up conversations about the arts, culture, and entertainment, all with a local twist. We begin with what was essentially the social media of the 18th century, and that's postcards. The medium is visual, it's about communicating by using a limited number of words, and it's also quite public. Like Twitter or a post on Facebook, it's a message that can be read by anyone, or anyone who's especially nosy. As a boy in the 1930s, Leonard Lauder, the billionaire son of Estée Lauder, started collecting postcards. It was a passion that has become a life's work, and now, at age 79, he's promised to gift his collection to the Museum of Fine Arts, which features a wide sampling in its exhibition, The Postcard Age, on view at the MFA through April. Here with me in Studio 3 is the MFA's Ben Weiss. He curated the show with Linda Klitsch. Welcome.
Thank you, Jared. Thanks for having me on.
And I should clarify, I think I misspoke. It wasn't the 18th century, but it was the 1890s where this whole frenzy started. And you took me around the show not too long ago, and I just thought it was so fascinating because not only are you looking at really interesting visual arts, but there's a great story behind it. So you told me from about 1890 to 1910, suddenly this frenzy, this international frenzy developed. What was it all about?
Well, exactly. It's the postcard isn't brand new in 1890. It was invented in 1869, and postcards actually were invented. It's not something that slowly evolved. The Austro-Hungarian Postal Service authorized the creation of prepaid postal cards that you could buy. The idea was that there would be one side for the address that was the equivalent of a stamp and the other side for your message. Almost immediately – they were supposed to be blank, by the way. Almost immediately, people started putting pictures on them, and slowly the pictures grew. They sort of started discreetly in the corner of the card and then kind of edged their way across the surface. There's a wonderful quote from the French sort of weekly, Le Figaro, in 1904, which talks about how the images, which were very sort of sweet and restrained and docile in the corner to begin with, got more and more aggressive over the decades. And by 1904, there was no room left to write at all on the cards. But that's key to how and why they became so popular.
Let me back up for a second. Was there a particular reason that they wanted people to send messages via postcards and not letters anymore?
I don't know if there was a particular reason that they were trying to create, I think it was more seeing an opportunity. By the 1870s, telegrams have been around for 20 years or so, 20, 30 years. And the idea of quick, short messages was already in the air. I think this is just an idea that why should I have to bother writing a full letter with an envelope if I am only sending a message to my friend saying, meet me at 2 o'clock for tea. And many early postcards have exactly that sort of message. These quick, short, meant to be read in a moment, just like a post to Twitter or an instant message or a text message. And when you read early postcards, they have that sort of very quick, off the cuff character that you see with social media and sort of fast electronic media today. What happens is that they become very popular very quickly. The postal services, Austria starts it, but the others pick it up very quickly. Make a great deal of money on postcards very fast. The advertisers get into the mix, and by 1890, as you say, you have the beginnings of what turns into a 20-year, 25-year postcard craze. It's a phrase they use at the time. They actually talk about an international mania, a craze, a bacillus that gets into the public bloodstream. And I think that the craze is like it's like any fad. It feeds on itself in the sense that there's not a particular reason that the cards become popular. They just do.
And there was such demand. I remember you telling me that people would be racing off the train. It was like, trying to get Furbies or whatever the equivalent toy
exactly.
is over this just recent Christmas holiday season was. People were thronging to stores and to pick up these postcards.
There's the craze hit first in Central Europe. It sort of hit Germany hardest and earliest. And the British humorists, particularly in the 1890s, had a great deal of fun with stories of German tourists who rushed from town to town on the trains, got off the train, dashed to the postcard store, converged on the postcard racks, beating each other up, thrashing, throwing cards around the room, grabbing anything they could, leaving the weak and the infirm for things like train stations and postcards of train stations and post offices, dashing back to the trains, at which point they would hurriedly write their notes, send them from the next town. The only way they would know what they had seen was when they got back home, received the postcards, and went through the boxes.
Curious about that. So they were writing to themselves because, why would you smash someone across the head to get a postcard if you were then going to give it away in the end?
Well, remember, this is a humorist writing, so perhaps there's a bit of poetic license. But they were both collecting them to send to themselves, I think, sometimes, but more often to friends and relatives. But what they were also doing was gathering postcards into albums and into boxes and collections that were never sent. So they're one of the things that you find in the postcard world, both then and now, actually, is that there's a divide between collectors who want their cards to be postally unused, which is a term in the postcard world, and those who want them to be have had a life going through the mails. And the collectors don't absolutely fall into one camp or the other, but you do find people who have strong preferences for a used card or an unused card.
So now flash forward to the MFA show, right, which you just curated, and you have about 700 postcards. And at the beginning, what are they? One of the things that intrigued me, I mean, you walk in and you have all of these pictures of Paris. That's what I immediately remember. Yeah. So these postcards give you a slice of life because it isn't even necessarily the you go on vacation now and you buy the well-lit picture of Mount Rushmore to mail to somebody. But these are essentially photographs.
Yes. The show has a wide variety of cards in it, and that was one of the things we were most trying to do. When Linda and I sat down to figure out how to pull a show together out of a very large collection, the Lauder Archive has 100,000 cards in it. And as you say, the show has 700. On the wall, we actually talk about it as a mere 700 cards. We were faced with this terrible problem of how do you both do justice to the range of stories in the collection and also give people a real sense of the breadth and the depth of this astonishing resource. So Linda already knew the collection. She's worked for Mr. Lauder for about 10, 12 years now as his postcard curator. And she said that the only way to do it was to do what he had told her to do when she took the job at the beginning, which was to take the boxes off the shelf and just go through them one by one, which was a wonderful experience because it really was not – we weren't directed yet. We were just going through and seeing what was there. And I'd go through a box, pull something that was particularly beautiful or particularly amusing, particularly peculiar out, take a picture of it, put it back in the box. And slowly what emerged was a way of – or a set of stories that we wanted to tell that was not really a history of postcards, which sounds a little dry, I think, but a way of conveying the many stories that are hidden inside this enormous resource. And you say we start with Paris. That was – we had originally thought that we would begin with two cards of the Eiffel Tower. They're identical cards from – they were – made in 1889, part of that moment when the pictures were still discreet on the edge of the card. One is blank, and the other one has a very sweet message from a Monsieur Meret, who is sending best wishes and kisses to his kids, or what we assume are his kids, from the top of the tower. We had that section. We had a small version of Paris to start with, and built around those. And when we sat down with Mr. Lauder, who knows this collection with in extraordinary detail. This is literally his life's work, and he knows these cards inside and out, backwards and forwards. He said, "This isn't enough. You need to start bigger. You need to make a statement about Paris. Everyone loves Paris. I love Paris. Hit them big with Paris." And that's where that idea for a large wall of slices of life, mostly They're real photograph cards, actual photographic prints that are printed on postcards. And what they do is give you this extraordinary ability to dip into lost moments of time.
So in front of a butcher shop.
Exactly.
You know, just street scenes. And we'll skip around to some of the themes that you picked up on just sort of around the corner, if I recall correctly. There are some naughty cards, too. I mean, I was a little bit stunned. We talked about this. Lady Gaga has an ad campaign right now. Did you look it up?
That afternoon, I went back to my desk and Googled it up. And it's astonishing how similar it is.
So I'll remind audiences who might not be following Lady Gaga's ad campaigns religiously, but she's laid out nude with little men climbing on her. And you have a postcard which is very, very similar to that image. So she's doing nothing new now. She's taking her career from the postcard age.
There is literally nothing new. That card is in a section that's devoted to women and the question of how women are portrayed and the changing roles of women at this moment. This is 1890 to 1920, 1925. It's a moment of fairly dramatic change in the way society thinks about gender roles and the way society portrays women, portrays men and women together. Some of the images in that section are very new. I mean, the postcards of the first women poster hangers in Paris, but also some of them are very traditional, like that one. It's a postcard of the Swiss mountain, the Jungfrau, the young woman, the virgin. And there are mountain climbers all climbing up the mountain. But the mountain has been turned into a reclining woman, so there's a slightly naughty overtone.
And was that okay to just be passing that? It seems to me, you know, that it would be so scandalous in that time, but am I just being prude?
No, I don't think so. One of the things that people worried about with postcards was that they were exposed. And one of the there were debates in the French press, for example, about whether it was appropriate to have risque images going through where they could be seen by women and children and your servants. There was a little bit of concern, but that didn't stop people from sending risque cards. Actually, pornographic cards generally didn't go through the mails. If they did, they went through discreetly tied up in envelopes.
We're talking about the postcard age, selections from the Leonard Lauder collection, now on view at the MFA. The curator, is Ben Weiss. Something kids might love, and I loved it too, is the light-up postcard. So then they start to evolve, and it's more than simply a postcard. Tell me about those.
Well, postcards from the beginning were a commercial product. I mean, these are published objects. These aren't limited edition prints in the way that you expect to find in a museum, maybe. And it was in the publisher's interest to sell as many cards as possible to as many people as possible. And they were always looking for a hook, an angle, an invention, a novelty. One of the things they came up with was the Hold to Light postcard, which is two postcards which are die cut, which means they have little holes poked in them, with translucent colored paper between. And so when you hold this picture of, for example, the Palace of Electricity at the 1900 World's Fair in Paris, up to a strong light, you can see the lights of the Palace of Electricity in pink and red and blue and green. We managed to rig them up with a little button that you can push so you can actually see the cards. These were a very popular novelty at the time. They were invented and suddenly there were hold-to-light cards everywhere. The ones we have are from Paris, from the 1900 fair, but also from Coney Island, from Luna Park, one of the...
Yeah, how much did the frenzy make its way over the Atlantic, and was it were they as popular here in the States?
They were popular everywhere, or at least everywhere in the industrialized world. The craze itself starts in Germany, and the British make their fun of the Germans in the 1890s. But by 1900, it seems to have swept the entire world. There are cards in North America, South America. There's a very large postcard craze in Japan, which some people who are local may remember from the previous postcard show we had at the MFA, which was dedicated to Mr. Lauder's Japanese postcards back in, I think, 2004 was the show.
Now, tell me about him. I mean, we've mentioned that he has 100,000 postcards in his collection. He has his own personal curator for the collection. Where did his interest come from?
as you said at the beginning, it's a lifelong project. He, as a boy, there are two stories that come up regularly about how he became interested in postcards. One is that as a boy of, you know, 5, 6, 7, something like that, he used his 5-cent allowance and bought 5 identical postcards of the Empire State Building because he thought the postcard was so beautiful. The other is that when he was spending summers, or rather winters, in Miami Beach, because his mother would go down to Florida in the winters to on business, he would go up and down the avenues in Miami picking postcards of Art Deco hotels that were possibly free even. Both of those stories sound completely realistic to me. But what happened is a fascination that extended over the decades. And that's one of the things that makes this collection so remarkable, is that it has both historical depth in the sense that it's been put together over many, many years, but also was put together one card at a time. This isn't a collection that was assembled 5,000 cards, 10,000 cards at a moment. He said that he doesn't like to do that because you don't get to know the cards.
So he knows each one of them personally.
To an astonishing degree, yeah. What must be a photographic memory. Certainly has a complete command of the collection, and we would have these wonderful sessions where we would go and lay each section of the show out on a table, and sort of see how it all fit together, how it hung together, how the various sections, whether it was about artists' cards or technology or women or advertising, how they looked both visually and intellectually. And this is someone who knows how to sort of make a sale, as it were. But he has an incredible eye and was always sort of saying, well, that doesn't work or that works or that's good. But what you really need is maybe that there's a German vacuum cleaner card.
Wow.
That's in the back of box 2 of advertising 2 or something, you know, something like that. And Linda and I would look at each other and say, I don't remember a German vacuum cleaner card. And we'd go off to the boxes and come up with what was very often exactly what we needed.
Now, what about artists? Did they sort of try to cash in on the craze? I mean, how do artists start to intersect? I mean, as you mentioned, they transition from being blank cards to some illustration too. Of course, that is entirely what they are. It's all about the image to the extent to which, you know, people, as you mentioned, I think a while ago too, were writing on the image because that's first where you had to write your message until they finally wised up and started writing on the back next to the address. But who started to create for these?
Well, at the very center of the show is a section devoted to artists' cards, which are often sets that artists made when the craze became sort of hit its peak around 1900. Both artists and publishers recognized that there was money to be made and an opportunity to get their message out. So we sort of saw as the heart of the show a group of 10 or 15 sets that artists had done either on commission from publishers or to promote exhibitions. There's the first Vienna Secession exhibition from 1898, for example. The various artists attached to the secession issued a set of postcards to basically attract people to the show, but also to serve as an artistic manifesto of what their vision of art should be. On the other hand, there was also a publisher in Brussels that was more directly commercial, the Dietrich Company, commissioned a number of avant-garde artists from Art Nouveau artists in this case.
Yeah, are there people that we're familiar with today? Other people, for instance, in the MFA's own holdings who we see creating?
Definitely. For example, the Art Nouveau artist of all, Alphonse Mucha, he didn't design postcards as postcards that much, but his publisher was very keen to get his designs onto postcards. There are a lot of artists who you know in sort of from other things. Emil Nolde, a sort of German expressionist artist, was early in his career was looking to make a little money, and he invented some postcards of the Alps with as personified beings, because all of the Alps have names, or many of the Alps have names of people. That's actually that Lady Gaga postcard is in that tradition. But One of the really delightful things about postcards in this period is that some of the very best cards are by people you've probably never heard of, and in some cases, they're by artists whose names have just been lost. The Dietrich cards that I mentioned, the Belgian ones, they're by an artist named, or two of the artists they hired were a fellow named Gisbert Combaz, or Combaz, we're not actually sure how he pronounces it, and Henri Meunier. These are, names people who are deep in the weeds of Art Nouveau know, but they're not common names. The cards, however, are stunning.
It really is a fantastic cross-section. And I mean, it's such disparate elements. You have done such a fantastic job, even in the layout, which is almost like walking through an album as it's being flipped. So congratulations on this show.
Well, thank you very much.
I've been speaking with the MFA's Ben Weiss. He curated the Postcard Age. The exhibit runs through April 14th. To learn more, visit our website, wgbhnews.org/BPR. Ben, thanks again so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
A high-profile museum heist, Boston's rarefied art scene, and the science of forging a painting come together in the best-selling novel, The Art Forger. A conversation with the author behind the book is next on Boston Public Radio. I'm Jared Bowen. You're listening to 89.7 WGBH.